This is Common Land. I'm Matt Podolsky.
Yeah, I mean, what to say? I hiked the trail last year. It took a really long time. it was my first experience of the United States was the Appalachian Trail, and I can't imagine like a better experience to have had.
This is Robin Urdaibe, aka Singalong. For long-distance hikers, being given your trail name can be a kind of rebirth. You're not supposed to pick it yourself. It's a gift given to you in a moment of inspiration. And Singalong was the person who gave a man named Paul Klassen his trail name.
He was carrying like a mini magnetic chess set, and he challenged someone, this guy called Mooch. And I've got a photo of it. It's really funny, like the night that he got his name. They were playing, like the shelter was getting dark around them, and they were so absorbed in this chess game. And I took a photo and I was like, Paul, you need to look harder, like you're concentrating. So he puts his hand like to the sides of his forehead, like, and squints really hard. And he won the game. And I remember saying, like, there you go, there's a trail name for you. You could be Grandmaster. And he took it immediately. Like, he was so pleased. Which is interesting because the symbolism of the chess king has kind of stuck with him. That there's a chess piece on his grave.
The people hiking around you on the Appalachian Trail start out as strangers.
It's kind of this weird, like, first day at school vibe where, like, no one's really sure what the vibe is yet and, like, how to behave in that context.
But the process of relationship building is sped up on the trail. Everyone is sharing meals and camping side by side. After a few weeks or months, it starts to feel like you've known these people your whole life. My mom and I only hiked a few miles here and there with Grandmaster, but Singalong, she was a part of his trail family.
Paul, like, really was one of those people who was just incredibly memorable and charismatic. He came into a room and, like, brought this incredible energy with him. So I think maybe that's one of the reasons I think it hit a lot of people pretty hard, because yeah, I think there were people, like, all up and down the trail who did remember, like, this one encounter they had with this incredibly tall, crazy Dutch guy. Right?
The death of Paul Klassen, also known as Grandmaster, on May 29th, 2022, shocked the long-distance hiking community.
McAfee Knob is one of the most photographed places on the Appalachian Trail, but an accident over the weekend has many been extra careful.
Roanoke County Fire and Rescue responded to a call Sunday morning that a man in his 20s had fallen an estimated 50 feet off the top of the mountain. Initial rescuers and a wilderness medical doctor from Carilion helped get the hiker to a waiting helicopter.
My friend Gumby, anyway, went with him to the hospital, and we got the call from her that he had died in the OR. He fell a pretty long way, but it was a survivable fall. Like, it's a fall that's a distance someone could fall and survive. But he landed in just the wrong spot.
Compared to some everyday activities, like driving, hiking on the Appalachian Trail is comparatively safe. But there are risks, and the Appalachian Trail hiking community has certainly experienced its fair share of grief. In fact, the original idea for the Appalachian Trail was born out of grief.
The AT comes from this moment of tragedy for Mackay.
And now, more than ever, people are hiking on the Appalachian Trail as a way to tame the grief associated with the loss of a loved one.
I found, after your father died, that I was looking for things to distract my mind from dealing with the difficulty of losing him. You couldn't do that on the trail.
I'm Matt Podolsky, trail name Birdman, and this is Common Land. In 2022, I set out to hike the Appalachian Trail with my mom. In this episode, we're going to talk about how the Appalachian Trail came into being and why it attracts people who are struggling with loss.
When you come back from an experience like that, people would ask me like, oh, what was it like? I bet, you know, the trail was amazing, right? And I'm like, well, I think my go-to was like, it had its ups and downs, right? Because I really felt like I experienced throughout the course of the trail, the full gamut of like human experience. I don't know. Do you want me to, shall I tell the story, I guess, of what happened with Paul?
Yeah, if you're willing to, yeah.
So we had been hiking together in this group of 9 awesome people who are still all my friends for like a good 500 miles. And it had been really, really fun, really good vibes. And I kind of forget how it happened, but I ended up splitting off with another friend of mine, Cracker, and we were ahead by a day for a few days. And it was kind of weird. So Cracker and I got a text from someone that he had hiked with like weeks before saying like, hey, we've heard something's happened. Is Grandmaster okay? And this was news to us. So we messaged our friends like, hey, we kind of got this weird message from someone. Is everything okay? And got a call back from our friend Gumby. And he had fallen off McAfee Knob.
McAfee Knob in Virginia is one of the most famous photo ops on the entire Appalachian Trail. It's a rock ledge that juts out into space with an incredible view.
There's this amazing photo of everyone sitting on the edge there from behind eating breakfast with like the sunrise. And it was like as the sun rose and he fell off the cliff like a sack of potatoes for no good reason. So the only thing that any of us can imagine is that like he passed out for some reason that we don't understand and will never understand. Did either of you or your mum get a Jolly Gear shirt?
No, we didn't.
Nah?
No.
So Paul bought the green one at Trail Days, and that was what he was wearing when he fell. And we talked about this with his dad and we all agreed we cut up the shirt and we each took a strip and put it on our packs. So Paul went the rest of the way with each of us. The idea of going back to walking and walking with purpose was like, it was very appealing to be back to doing something, I don't know, not, I don't want to say meaningful, it was all meaningful, but just like to be back in movement felt a lot better, I guess.
When you lose someone close, it can feel like the world has come to a stop. It's hard to know if you'll ever be able to move on.
I had seen a documentary on the Appalachian Trail.
That's my mom. Trail name, Chili Pepper Woman.
And I thought to myself, because your father was so sick at the time, I thought if I was smart, that's what I would do to heal.
Mm-hmm. Me and my mom set off on our first long distance hike in 2013, just a few months after my dad died. We hiked the entire long trail in Vermont, covering 275 miles in about 4 weeks. When you're in that space where grief has taken over, there's something incredibly powerful about the simplicity of walking.
You had to deal with it. It gave you a chance to think about it and to mourn and then to start thinking about how to heal.
Mm. Yeah, I think of it almost as like a form of meditation.
Yes, I agree.
Your mind goes off in all kinds of places and it does. Like you have no other choice. Like you have to process those thoughts.
You do. It forces you to process what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing, mm-hmm. Which I think in this day and age, often we play an avoidance game. And I certainly was doing that up until that time.
You know, in a certain sense, you know, Dad is the one who like really got both of us, you know, initially interested in just getting outside, being in the outdoors and hiking.
Absolutely. And all that. He did. I had never camped before I met your father. You know, I think he would, on one hand, think we were crazy, and on the other hand, be a little inspired. Mm-hmm. You know, the longest hike he ever did, I believe, was a 3-day, maybe 4-day, maybe. I came out of the experience not only feeling like the woods are home, but also that I feel like a stronger person because of the hike.
This experience that my mom and I had is not unique. In fact, the idea of the Appalachian Trail being used as a space to process grief goes back to the very beginning of the trail. When conservationist Benton McKay first came up with the idea for the trail, he was grieving.
McKay published the article. He wrote and published the article within months of his wife's suicide.
That's Philip Denieri, author of The Appalachian Trail, a biography.
I can remember as I was doing the research and suddenly matching up, wait a minute, this is happening in the spring of 1921 and the article is published in November of 1921. Like, those two things are right up next to one another.
The article he's talking about is the first ever written mention of the Appalachian Trail. It was titled An Appalachian Trail, A Project in Regional Planning. It came with a map, and together they laid out a vision for a long-distance footpath that spanned the length of the Appalachian Mountains. Just a few months earlier, McKay's wife, Jessie, a social activist who was very active and outspoken in the women's suffrage movement, had drowned in the East River.
Very unexpectedly, his wife commits suicide, and a friend of his says, come to my farm in New Jersey and take whatever time you need to get healthy again.
That's Jeff Ryan, the author of Blazing Ahead, Benton McKay, Myron Avery, and the Rivalry That Built the Appalachian Trail.
And so he started wandering around, and he came up with this idea for this interstate trail as a place where people could go and gain perspective, much as he had, and thought that there should be this resource within everybody's reach that allows them to get out and get away from the man-made and the hubbub and the pressures and sort of reconnect with nature and themselves. And that became the impetus for formalizing what would become the plan for the Appalachian Trail.
By the time my mom and I started our thru-hike of the Appalachian Trail, it had been almost 10 years since we lost my dad. We were no longer hiking to get past the grief of losing him. But the loss of Grand Master brought a lot of those feelings back up to the surface.
You know, I mean, I think it says a lot about somebody when a 65-year-old woman is hoping she's going to catch up with this 23-year-old kid just to see him again.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Grandmaster fainted. I mean, it seems like it's just super unlucky that it happened when he was close enough to an edge that he could fall over.
As you can imagine, I've been thinking about it a lot because I faint.
Yeah,
and,
right. You can kind of have a sense, right? Like, if you're about to faint?
Most of the time, not always.
Right.
Sometimes you just go out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been thinking a lot about Grandmaster and how that happened. Yeah, he struck me as an extraordinary individual.
We'll be back with more about the Appalachian Trail after a short break. Hey there, adventurers. Are you ready to hit the trail this season? If so, check out Big Agnes, the mother of comfort. Whether you're backpacking, car camping, or sleeping under the stars in your backyard, Big Agnes gear is built for comfort without compromise. Their award-winning sleeping bags, pads, and tents are lightweight, durable, and feel like home, no matter where you roam. Say goodbye to cold, stiff nights, and hello to plush, cozy sleep in the wild or your backyard. Find Big Agnes at an outdoor retailer near you or at bigagnes.com and feel the difference. Big Agnes, comfort built for the backcountry. I'm Matt Podolsky. This is Common Land, a series about the Appalachian Trail.
Mackay slowly built the idea of the AT over time.
Again, that's Philip Denieri. It's tempting to imagine the Appalachian Trail coming straight from Mackay's grief-stricken imagination. But the reality is that there was already a movement to connect existing hiking trails and create longer trail systems in the Northeast.
You could even argue that as much as Mackay's article got the effort going, he was in some ways such a reluctant participant in his own creation, and there were so many other trail-building efforts out there, some version of it might have happened even if Mackay hadn't come along. So look, the AT has many owners and parents and inventors, and yes, there are particular individuals with particular, sometimes dramatic connections to it, but I think it's more accurate to think of it as a product of the society that it came out of.
In other words,
Mackay was an idea guy, but he was not a project manager.
Again, that's the voice of Jeff Ryan. He's written about one of the other big names in Appalachian Trail history.
In 1929, this fellow named Myron Avery took the reins. And in 9 years, he commandeered building the whole thing out, which is just an absolutely phenomenal thing. But not only did he orchestrate this from a project management perspective, he actually went out into the field and literally walked over 2,000 miles of the trail, spotting where it would go. And this is the funky part, wheeled a 28-pound bicycle wheel in front of him with an odometer on it, and wrote the guidebook as he was walking along. He made it happen.
Avery may have been great at getting things done, but he also had a surly reputation.
If you read Avery's letters, he was, I mean, in the modern day, we would think of him as being in a sort of constant flame war, you know, on if he had Twitter at his disposal and social media, I mean, all he did was write angry, dismissive, demeaning letters to all sorts of people. He was a very, very difficult individual. I don't think you needed somebody that, you know, problematic in their day-to-day interactions to have made the trail what it was. On the other hand, it is true that if somebody with his devotion and time and intensity hadn't been there, it definitely wouldn't have, you know, turned out the way it did.
Of course, at the time when Avery was involved in his frenetic style of trail building, nobody could have imagined what the trail would become in the coming decades. Neither Mackay nor Avery imagined that anyone would ever attempt something like a thru-hike. This despite the fact that Avery himself was the first person to hike the entire length of the trail in sections. Now, 90 years later, hundreds of people hike the trail's entire length each year.
So, for the last week or so, my mom and I have been pretty consistently hiking 20-mile days. Almost every day, with the exception of days that were heading into town. So it's just been sort of go, go, go. And partly the reason for that is that my wife Miranda and kid Rowan, they're heading out to visit with us in just a few days. We're about 4 days now from reaching the southern end of Shenandoah National Park. And then a few days after we enter Shenandoah, Miranda and Rowan will meet us.
Shenandoah National Park is another well-known milestone along the Appalachian Trail. For me, the most significant thing to happen in Shenandoah was seeing my wife and son for the first time in 2.5 months and hiking with them in the park. But for the Appalachian Trail itself, the creation of Shenandoah National Park was a crucial turning point.
Two words, Skyline Drive. The first 34 miles of Skyline Drive in the northern Shenandoah were literally laid down over the top of the Appalachian Trail.
Today, Skyline Drive is known as the Ridgetop Road that cuts through the center of Shenandoah National Park. But in the 1930s, Skyline Drives were being proposed across a dozen different mountain ranges.
There were 12 Skyline Drives being proposed in the United States, including ones over the top of the Green Mountains and the White Mountains in Vermont and New Hampshire.
The Skyline Drive was a concept. The concept of building roads across the high ridgelines of America's most beautiful mountain ranges. And there was nothing that infuriated Benton McKay more than Skyline Drives. In 1933, McKay and Avery found out that construction had already begun on a Skyline Drive across the Shenandoah ridgeline.
McKay, Avery, and the secretary of the Potomac Appalachian Trail Club, they went up to look at it in 1933, I believe, and they saw what was happening, and they were absolutely mortified. All three of them said, oh my God, what's going on here? And they realized that the trail was about to be subsumed for about 60 miles. Originally, all three of them were going to be very vocal in their protests about this road. And Avery reconsidered, and he said, you know, I've been thinking about this. As long as the park moves the trail over and pays for it, I'm not against the road, because I'm all about making a contiguous trail. And McKay's response was, you have to be kidding me. I mean, this is completely against everything that the trail stands for. In my mind, I created this thing to have people get away from automobiles, among other things. And now we have progress, quote unquote, laying itself right over the trail.
McKay and Avery's opposing views on Skyline Drive developed over the course of a few years into an organizational rift. McKay had created the Appalachian Trail Conference in 1925, but as McKay and Avery became more and more vocal about their opinions over Skyline Drives, members of the Appalachian Trail Conference began to take sides.
McKay started getting more and more vocal about the need for the club to come out with a statement against Skyline Drives. In 1935, at the meeting, Avery came to the podium with a proposal to align each trail club's voting proportion with the miles of trail that went through each state. So he knew that the states with the longest mileage in them would be aligned with him. And that's what successfully got any statement against Skyline Drives being permanently shelved, and B, McKay and friends leaving the organization.
Is this the viewpoint? Bro, go check it out. Or sorry, Sonic, go check it out.
A view! Oh yeah, this is a good view.
That was my son, Rowan, who adopted the trail name Sonic, and my mom, also known as Chili Pepper Woman, hiking in Shenandoah National Park.
Look at those cliffs over there.
And there's about a million spots to sit.
Give this viewpoint a rating, Rowan, or Sonic. 10's the best, and 1's the worst. What does this viewpoint get?
No, not 1 to 10.
Okay.
What's it?
One to 100.
Okay, 1 to 100. How many points does it get?
100.
Oh, 100 out of 100?
Wow.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Hiking through Shenandoah National Park was a blast. It was wonderful to see my wife and son after such a long absence, and the scenery was amazing, despite the crowds. We were able to keep our packs light and rely on Shenandoah's famous waysides for many of our meals, indulging in milkshakes on a daily basis. I really enjoyed my time in Shenandoah, and I didn't hear any complaints from fellow hikers about Skyline Drive. So was Bent McKay's fervent advocacy against Skyline Drive misplaced? The reality is that McKay's vision for the Appalachian Trail evolved over time.
McKay's evolution was, in a sort of utopian way, can we figure out the ideal balance of the built and the natural and make it all work in a socially just and economically productive and naturally respectful way? And as he got on in years, he became more frustrated that he couldn't make that happen. And so was one of the people who created the idea of wilderness in the Wilderness Society as, well, the least we can do is wall off some areas.
Viewed through a certain lens, McKay's utopian vision for the Appalachian Trail has been fulfilled. The trail represents a delicate and intentional balance between the built and the natural. It provides economic opportunities all up and down the trail's corridor, and it represents a unique culture with a distinct sense of place.
There are transportation systems, lodging systems, laundry systems, food systems, Uber drivers, you name it, that have all benefited tremendously economically by having the trail there. And now we have trail town celebrations up and down the trail every year in communities that benefit from the trail being in their midst.
There's an interesting irony here. McKay's original vision, as laid out in his article that introduced the Appalachian Trail, was about economic development and building community around the trail. At the time, many others, Avery included, saw this vision as utopian and unrealistic. But as the decades passed and McKay's original vision inched closer to reality, McKay's perspective changed, and he began to place more value on protecting pristine wilderness areas. These two conflicting ideas permeate all aspects of the environmental movement. McKay was not unique in this regard. We continue to have the same debate to this day. How do we protect wild spaces without restricting access? After Avery's successful takeover of the Appalachian Trail Conference, McKay shifted his focus. He co-founded the Wilderness Society and served as the organization's president. He witnessed the passage of the Wilderness Act in 1964, which codified into law many of the ideas that he'd been advocating for since that day he saw Skyline Drive being built over the top of the Appalachian Trail. Today, the Appalachian Trail passes through 25 different federally recognized wilderness areas. From a certain angle, it looks like the Appalachian Trail has achieved a perfect balance between wildness and access. But in reality, the trail is anything but utopian.
Shenandoah was a segregated park until after the passage of the Scenic Trails Act. Black people could go to the park, but they had to be all the way down in the south end of the park.
That's in our next episode of Common Land. Common Land is a production of the Wildlands Collective. This season was produced in partnership with New Hampshire Public Radio. This episode was produced by me, your host, Matt Podolsky. Music is by Blue Dot Sessions. To listen to the next episode in the series, just search for Common Land in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about the show and to see a full list of credits, go to commonlandpodcast.com.